John chapter 6, verses 56 through 69. Those who eat my flesh and drink my blood abide in me, and I in them. Just as the living Father sent me, and I live because of the Father, so whoever eats me will live because of me. This is the bread that came down from heaven, not like that which your ancestors ate, and they died, but the one who eats this bread will live forever. He said these things while he was teaching in the synagogue at Capernaum. When many of his disciples heard it, they said, "This teaching is difficult. Who can accept it?" But Jesus, being aware that his disciples were complaining about it, said to them, "Does this offend you? Then what if you were to see the Son of Man ascending to where he was before? It is the Spirit that gives life. The flesh is useless. The words that I have spoken to you are the Spirit and life. But among you there are some who do not believe." For Jesus knew from the first who were the ones that did not believe, and who was the one that would betray him. And he said, "For this reason I have told you that no one can come to me unless it is granted by the Father." Because of this, many of his disciples turned back and no longer went about with him. So Jesus asked the 12, "Do you also wish to go away?" Simon Peter answered him, "Lord, whom can we go? You have the words of eternal life. We have come to believe and know that you are the Holy One of God." May God bless the reading and receiving of His Word.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, choir. When you are in need of something, where do you go? When you're in need of food and clothing, where do you go? Those essential things of life. When you're in need of housing, where do you go? When you run into difficulties, for example, at the hospital, where do you go? Has anybody ever had that trouble? You're in the hospital or a family member's there and you run into trouble and you just don't know to whom to turn or where to go. Where do you go to be safe? Where do you go to find those things that are life-giving or life-affirming? Where do you go when you have questions of faith? When circumstances seem to be overwhelming and you wonder just what to do next? Where do you go? Where can you go? For many people, those questions come about far too often. And unfortunately, there are many who no longer seek to find answers in places that traditionally people would go, especially spiritual questions. We've talked about recent surveys where the majority of people in this country say that they're spiritual, but fewer and fewer of them are saying that they're religious. Which basically means they're searching for something spiritual and they want to have some kind of spiritual connection, but they're not religious. That basically means they don't go to church or they don't go to synagogue. And they don't go there to find those things which are spiritual and which reveal the deeper things of God. Far too often, we are surrounded by persons who say that they are spiritual, but they don't show their spirituality, even within the church. So where can you go? What can you do? To whom can you go? Jesus was surrounded by many disciples, not just the 12. Those are the ones that we most often think about, those 12. And even they had questions about Jesus at different points in His life and ministry, about who He was, about what He was doing, about what He was saying. But Jesus was surrounded by a whole lot of other folks, some of whom claimed to be followers, disciples, learners. And yet we find in several different places in the New Testament when Jesus would teach, and especially when Jesus would say something that was a difficult saying, people would back away. They wouldn't hang around very long. And such is the case here in the Gospel of John in chapter 6. Now, we've dealt with a portion of chapter 6 a few years ago with the folks who wanted to follow Jesus to see if they could get another free meal and see what the next trick would be. But here we have Jesus talking about His flesh and His blood, kind of a precursor to what happens in the meal at the Last Supper, the meal that we will share shortly together as believers in remembering Jesus' sacrifice. And here Jesus talks about eating His flesh and drinking His blood, and that that would be life-giving. Most of the people who were around Him couldn't comprehend this. Some of the Jewish religious leaders were offended. Even some of those who had followed Him around and had listened to a lot of His teachings and were kind of coming around on the fringes of believing that there was something extra special about Him couldn't comprehend. In fact, they began asking questions and saying, "How can this man do this? How can he give body and blood? How can we eat flesh and blood?" They took Him very literally when Jesus was actually speaking metaphorically about His sacrifice. This paradox of eating and drinking flesh and blood on the surface was a repulsive thing. It really was. Eating flesh and drinking blood. In fact, if you go back to some of the earlier prohibitions within Judaism and within the law, you were supposed to ruin that piece of meat. When you cooked it, you weren't supposed to leave any blood in it. You just ruined it. Took all the taste out of it. Well, in my opinion. You know, if I'm going to have a steak, I don't mind if it moves as long as it doesn't bite. But this was, on the surface, a repulsive kind of thing. And to be talking about flesh and blood as in human flesh and human blood, that was even more repulsive. It would be for us. Cannibalism? No. But this metaphor that Jesus uses stands not for a literal eating of flesh and drinking of blood, but it really stands for an indwelling. A dwelling in constant union with Christ. For what happens? What happens when you eat food? When you drink. I put on 4 pounds in the last week. I can tell you what happens. I over-consumed. But boy, those rolls were good, and that fried shrimp was... And so was the steak that I had. I didn't get as much exercise. But I can tell you what happens. When you eat it and you drink it, it unifies with you. But Jesus is not talking about that literally. He is talking about this mystical union that comes about in His sacrifice. And when we remember His life and His teachings, not just the meal that we will share, but His life and His teachings along with His death. As one New Testament theologian wrote, what Jesus was saying is we must feed on Him. That is, absorb His teachings, His character, His mind, His ways. Practice His virtues until the mind of Christ is one with our mind because we are in Him and unified through Him. Jesus is not just talking about the meal that we're about to share with the bread and the cup. Jesus is talking about the bread that He brings in His teachings and in His life. The Spirit that He gives in the order of His life, in the order of His teachings. Many of those who were following him at this time misunderstood that the teachings he was giving and the life that he lived, the character that he showed through the Spirit, was what was life-giving and life-affirming. Far too often, we in churches, and this may be part of the problem with people saying they're spiritual but not religious, is we tend to be less than life-affirming in the ways that we talk to people or treat people, not just outside the church, but sometimes even within the church. And yet it was Jesus who went to those who were in need and affirmed life for them. Life in His character, in His teachings, in His Spirit. And many of those who were following Jesus that day were offended. They misunderstood. Why? Because they had stayed on the fringes. Because they really hadn't come to know and to understand Jesus by spending time, by gaining discernment. He has to remind them here that He is speaking and living throughout His life out of a higher order of living and a higher authority, that is God. And He reminds them that He is speaking to them, that they are, if they pursue closely a life with Him and with His teachings, that they too are being called to a higher order of living. Not just in heaven, but a higher order of living here upon the earth. People need spiritual discernment to truly see Jesus and to assimilate the living bread into living their lives. Because after all, is that not what it's really about? Assimilating the living bread, the life and the teachings of Jesus, into our own lives and our own way of living, so that the life-giving quality of His message, His words, and His deeds through the Spirit and His sacrifice will bring life not only to us, but life to those whose lives we might touch because of Him. We must believe, yes, but we must also live the belief. We're told here that many of the disciples found this saying too difficult. Why? Once again, because they had not really gotten to know Jesus, and they took Him very literally at what He was saying, and it offended them, and they left. They didn't want to do the work of thinking and reasoning and following when times were hard and when understanding was difficult. Those folks left, and when Jesus was alone with the 12, He looked to them and said, "Do you want to leave too?" He's asking His disciples if they can stand the strain and remain loyal, even when the sayings and the teachings are hard to understand. Peter gives a confession here. While it is not exactly like the confession that we read in the Gospel of Mark chapter 8 or in others of the synoptics, when Jesus says, "Who do men say that I am? And who do you say that I am?" it is still very similar in his understanding. Peter confesses and says, "To whom else can we go? For you have the words of eternal life. You are the Holy One of God. And we have come to believe and have come to know that you're the Holy One of God." Even that one, Judas Iscariot, who, by the way, later shared in the meal too, had come to know that Jesus was Messiah. It's just his idea was short-sighted. Because the hard questions and the difficult understandings didn't fully set with him. But Jesus asked them, "Would you go too?" And Peter's response was, "To whom else could we go?" We have come to believe and we have come to know. How? Because they listened. Because they reasoned. Because they worked through the difficult sayings and situations of life with Jesus. Because they spent more than a cursory moment with Him, praying, listening, learning. The question that Jesus asked, and the question that Peter drops on the floor for us today is the same. Would you go also? And to whom can you go for words of eternal life? Not just eternal life, pie in the sky, by and by, but eternal living in the character of Jesus, with the mind of Christ, with the spiritual discernment, with the words and the deeds, not only that He teaches, but that we then live. Because we have gone to Him to spend time. To whom can we go? To the one who can help us understand the difficulties of life. To the one who can stand there with us through the difficulties of life when we don't understand, so that we might truly live. To whom can you go? Jesus gave us that answer not only in His life and teachings, but in His death and in His resurrection and in His continued living. We will come in a few moments to remember that death and that resurrection, that sacrifice that Jesus made for us. But I also hope when we come to table in a few moments that we will also remember the life that He lived and to which He calls us. As we prepare for that moment, we will come and prayerfully sing hymn number 460. Let us break bread together. Our altar is open. If you would like to make a decision for Christ, for membership in this fellowship, or in recommitment to Him, as we come to break bread together, would you stand and would you sing prayerfully hymn number 460?